You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. And what a beautiful day it is today. We have a great show planned today. We're heard on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web everywhere, Miss Ellen.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can go to that website and hit the Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Or right there are the archives as well on the on-demand. You can pick by date. Of course, we share all of that information on our website as well as our social media. It's under cedamediainc.com is the social media page as well as Viewpoint with Ceda and Friends. And then our website is cedamediainc.com. where you can search by name, you can search by topic. And over the last 14 years, two guests a week times 14 years, there's a lot of shows up there to search through, a lot of great information, a lot of people to stay in contact with, resources, all kinds of cool
stuff.
That's
right. And today's no different. On Mondays, we sit here, Ellen O'Neill, myself, and Allie. Allie Tambor is with us. She's all the time now with us. So we've elevated her status from guest, resident guest, to just part of the show now.
Intern.
Yeah. She's part of our family now.
Yeah, I got a promotion.
Right. That's right. And so for our guests, for our listeners who are tuning in today to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we sit here and we talk about kitchen table topics every Monday. Things that are going on right here in the state of Florida, in Brevard County, Florida, around the world, and God knows wherever else. One day we'll have somebody calling in from the moon.
The moon.
You watch.
Soon, you never know.
And so we talk about health and wealth and welfare and the environment, and we talk about banking and buying a house and interest rates, and Lord knows we've had a lot of authors and writers and people, teachers. I mean, we've had, I've been counting for people, and I lost count of how many wonderful guests we've had. And so today's no different. This particular guest, Dr. Cheryl Woodson, is one of my favorite peoples because, as you know, I work in a nursing facility. I've been a long-term care nurse for over 35 years. And I love to talk about caregivers and practitioners and, you know, so many of physicians. They do not take the time to take care of themselves because they're giving so much to everybody else. And so I thought it would be a good time to have Dr. Cheryl Woodson call in today and speak about things like that. And then our second segment is with a gentleman, Ms. Dr. Gregory Pirio, P-I-R-I-O, Pirio. And he's going to be calling in to talk about his experience and background in using the use of communication and the media globally for construction of social changes. So that's our second segment. And our first segment, our guest, Dr. Cheryl Woodson, is already on the phone, and we're going to talk a little bit about caregiver survival and taking care of ourselves and whatever doctor wants to talk about this morning. So Dr. Woodson, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. You are a triple board certified physician, and we are honored to have you on our show.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, and I know that, how's the weather in Chicago today?
Well, we're at a balmy 28 degrees. We're doing great. We've had air temperatures of like minus 8 and wind chills of minus 30 for the last week, 10 days. So we're having a heat wave here.
Your face won't hurt today. From all the wind.
And on top of all of that, you're packing to move to Naperville.
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, Naperville is I've driven through that with some friends when I lived in Chicago, and I loved the scenery. Lots of beautiful trees, I remember.
Well, there's also just a really vibrant cultural activity there. I mean, they have a theater, they have a choir, they have all these community events, they have great restaurants, and I'm a spa brat, so there are two spas in Naperville that I just love going to, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's a downsize for me, and it's saving me a considerable amount of money, which I hope to use to travel. I want to find a real jazz cruise that goes around the Greek Isle. So if anybody knows of one, please get in touch with me.
I know just the person to get a hold of you.
Yeah, yeah. I know what?
But I need real jazz. I can't do smooth jazz anymore.
You just lengthened your lifespan by another 25 years.
Indeed.
Because when you're happy and you know it, stomp your feet.
That's right.
And that's what you're doing, right? So let's chat a little bit. Since the last time you called in on our show, you've got your books out. You're still doing your caregiving speeches and everything that you do for people. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on. Bring us up to speed about elder care and what you're doing.
Well, in September of last year, there was some legislation put out about supporting family caregivers and grandparents who have primary responsibility for children. And the National Alliance for Family Caregiving and AARP and other people have been working on how to implement that legislation in a way that's real. As you know, I'm a clinician. That is my thing. I'm not a researcher. I'm not a policymaker. But when I talk to people who are policymakers, I want to let them know what it's like down on the ground. I mean, you can talk about that stuff in Congress, but you have to make it operational on the ground. And one of the things that I've been starting to talk about is how health systems and other places that employ healthcare professionals can work on burnout and work with our professional caregivers as well. And it's how to get them involved in being a primary support for family caregivers, but also for themselves, and have it be a functional, institutional part of the care space. So that's where I'm going right now.
Right, so you're basically saying to lawmakers and people in the Congress, say it's, you know, walk in the caregiver's shoes. Because people are beginning to feel crushed with caregiving. It takes a lot out of...
People have been crushed for decades.
That's right.
That nobody acknowledged that family caregivers are the backbone of our healthcare system. They provide almost 80% of the care older adults get, and it is unpaid.
Yeah, and you know what it is, too? You take that home to your families, and you're stressed out when you get home, and you can't function because you've given so much of yourself all day. And I know that when you called in before, we had talked about surviving. So can you give our listeners here in Viewpoint with Sita and Friends some of the keys to surviving? I know you had given us 5 keys to caregiver survival. And people need to hear that all the time, because not everybody have the money for a pedicure, a manicure, and a massage. Right, there has to be other things we can do. Some people do yoga. Some people go for a walk in the park. But I know you would talk to us about so many things that we can do to survive the stressful environment in which caregivers live.
Well, there are 5 keys to caregiver survival that I published in my book, To Survive Caregiving, A Daughter's Experience, A Doctor's Advice. And the first one is, don't put your head in the sand. If you think or anybody in your family suggests that your older adult needs help, don't pretend it's not there. Go check it out. Get an assessment with your physician, and what I call the level of care prescription is 10 questions that you can ask your care team, and that will tell you exactly what your loved one needs and how to begin getting it. The second key is to take the S off your chest or a step away from the kryptonite. You are not super caregiver. It's not possible for people to do it all themselves. You've got to pull together a team. The third key is don't ask, don't tell, won't work. You know, people have to know that you need help. And there are 3 caveats to that. One is show up or shut up. The people who are supposed to help you have to show up to help you, or they can't criticize what you do. And I give some specific language in the book that you can use so that you can tell people that without ruining Thanksgiving dinner next year. There's ways to do that. One is, the second caveat is don't lean on Reeve. I mean, it comes from a book called Jesus in Blue Jeans by Lori Beth Jones. It's really great. And it says that he didn't lean on Reeve. If somebody repeatedly proves unreliable, stop relying on them. The problem is not that your sister won't help you, it's that you keep expecting her to. Next.
So how about saying to the sister, hey, we need to talk. These are your responsibilities. When are you showing up?
No. That's the other thing. You don't tell them what to do. You ask them what they can do.
Oh, great. That's even better. That's even better.
Nobody died and made you queen.
Yes.
And you don't know why she won't help. Maybe the mother who was so great to you wasn't such a good mother to her.
True talk.
And it doesn't matter what happened. It only matters what she thinks happened. Okay?
Yes.
So you have to ask them what they can do, and then you have to value what they do. If what they do is not what you want them to do, if they're getting the oil changed in your car or picking up your kids from Girl Scouts, that's valuable. The fact that they can't sit there and change wounds and take people to the bathroom, you have to value what they actually do.
Yeah, because everyone is different, right? And you hit the nail on the head. I had a sister who would say, when my mother got to that age where she had dementia and, you know, she didn't know a lot of things, she would say, well, I can cook and I can bring vegetables and I can wash clothes, but I can't give her a bath and do that kind of stuff that you guys are doing. So that we thought was very valuable because she was giving us what she...
don't find that valuable.
That's
some
right.
Some caregivers want people to do what they tell them, and that's not going to work. The fourth key to caregiver survival is, if you don't want to have to drive all the time, you need to take your hands off the steering wheel. Let people help you. If somebody's going to help you, don't micromanage. If there's something that the medical team thinks is essential, that's one thing. But do you care whether she wears the blue shirt or the pink shirt? No.
So,
stop
doctor,
trying to micromanage.
So, Dr. Woodson, so then... What are those are excellent key things to keep track of, and it's an excellent start. What does a caregiver what can they do to make sure that they're taking good care of themselves so that then they can give?
Well, that's the fifth key. The fifth key is to do what flight attendants tell you to do in an airline emergency. Put your mask on first. You cannot take care of them if you don't take care of yourself. And especially as we're talking about professional caregivers who are also family caregivers, I have a friend who's an executive in an insurance company, and she works a 12-hour day, stops at the grocery store on the way home, makes dinner for her mom, does laundry, then stays up all night doing paperwork for her business, and then goes back to work. And I asked her, do you make the coffee in your office?
That's an excellent question.
Have those groceries delivered?
Right.
Decrease the unemployment in this country. Hire a high school student to do the laundry. But we don't think about that. The same skills that we are using running our professions and our business, we need to pull those organizational skills into the family caregiving space and be CEO of our family caregiving team.
I love that. That is so true. Be the CEO of the caregiving circle at home. So do you think it's because caregivers feel like they have to be perfect? I mean, how can we tell caregivers that you don't have to have perfectionism? All you have to do is value other people's time and bring them into the circle to help you so you could be less stressed out in a 24-hour period.
The first thing you need is what I call the level of care prescription. It's 10 questions that you ask your care team that tell you, your health care team, tell you exactly what you need. So you're guessing. You're not feeling bad because you're not doing everything you're supposed to do, because you know exactly what you're supposed to do. Part of caregiver stress, first of all, is, I think, insecurity and fear that they are not giving good care. If you have a level of care prescription, you know exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And then the social service professionals help you pull together the care team to make that happen. You are the quarterback. You are not the lineman. You just have to make sure stuff happens. You do not have to do it yourself. But for professional caregivers, like me as a doc, taking care of my mother for 10 years, it's not just the perfectionism. It's that we are used to working ourselves to death. We don't know how not to work yourself to death, you know, doing 36-hour shifts in the emergency room. You know, we have forgotten what it's like to be normal.
So, and Dr. Woodson, do you have an understanding of, is there more women that end up in these roles and fewer men, and how would we increase
now,
that?
Yeah, it's always been unpaid female caregiver for the last 100 years. Unpaid female relative. But 40% of caregivers today are men.
Oh, that's good.
It's not good or bad. It's just, you know, it just is. And everybody needs to decide what works for them.
Right.
But it's really important that you give yourself permission to get rid of your stress. You give yourself permission to get help. And a lot of us in the professional, particularly in the helping field, give our patients and families and everybody else more grace and more love and more benefit of the doubt than we give ourselves.
Yeah, so you're saying, do it to not feel guilty that you're seeking assistance. Don't feel guilty, because self-care is just as important as giving care.
Well, self-care is not selfish, and that's one of the things people need to understand.
I want to jump in too, because I come from a big family as well, and all of my family are first responders and nurses and firemen and police, so they kind of have an idea already of what to do and to take care of family members, and I didn't. So I welcome the fact that somebody actually gave me a job. Because I was standing around kind of like watching everybody else do things and not knowing where I was supposed to pitch in, but also not wanting to get in the way. So the self-care, as well as don't be afraid to ask questions, and don't be afraid if that's not your forte, that you could be I was the lunch getter, you know?
Yeah.
I was that person.
Value whatever help you can get. But when I do seminars, particularly for professionals on self-care, but even for family caregivers, I always ask this question. If somebody told you the story you just told me, would you say anything to them like what you say to yourself? Would you tell them they were stupid or lazy or weak? No. So we have to give ourselves that same grace and understand that we are not just here to help other people. We are part of the continuum of life that we need to get help to.
Yeah. I think one of the most important things you said to us this morning, and it resonates with so many people that I know, of course, being a nurse myself and having so many friends in the medical profession, being the executive of our caregiving team. I never thought of it that way before. And you just opened my eyes to like a whole new world, because no one thinks of themselves as the executive of a caregiving team. And how did you come up with that?
I don't know. You know, I'm a writer. I'm working on novel number 2. Just happens to me.
It just popped. Now, one of the questions that somebody just sent me, I guess someone looked you up on the web, Straight Talk with Dr. Cheryl Woodson here. What is the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia, if you could explain that to them?
That is one of my favorite topics. Thank you. That wasn't my sister that called you. She didn't block me. Alzheimer's disease is one form of dementia. Dementia is the overarching category of brain dysfunction that is not reversible, that is progressive and persistent, and is ultimately a terminal illness. People die of dementia. Alzheimer's disease is one type of dementia. Having lots of little strokes or vascular dementia is another type. Frontotemporal dementias are a third type, and there's 3 of them in that category. And this is what Bruce Willis and his family are struggling with.
Oh, yeah.
Frontotemporal dementias often do not begin with memory loss at all. He has a form called primary progressive aphasia, where he is not able to generate language. But there are some frontotemporal dementias that come with shaking, like Parkinson's disease and visual hallucinations. Some that come with inability to see things in 3 dimensions and raise our eyes above the horizon. And some of them start out with abnormal social behaviors. You know, like laughing in places where that's not appropriate, or being sexual in places where that's not appropriate.
Right.
But there are dementias associated with multiple sclerosis and HIV and other viral infections. And then there's chronic traumatic encephalopathy that the sports teams are having with the contact sports. So these are all different types of dementia, but they all come to common pathway in that they're terminal illnesses. Today, even with all the medications that we have,
right,
we have not found a way to stop this or prevent it.
And there's also alcohol-induced dementia, too. I know people...
And other substances.
That's right. And people are so young, and they start forgetting, and they're like, oh, well, I don't know. Well, it's alcohol. A lot of times, it's alcohol. You know, so...
And what, you know... Marijuana has been legalized in Illinois for recreational, not just medicinal reasons. And we don't have any data on the long-term effects of cannabis on the brain. That's research that just needs to be done.
That's correct. We see that a lot. I mean, we're watching everywhere. People are saying, oh, it's legal. I can smoke now. I can vape. And you're right, the studies will be here after we're gone, but it is something to think
about. I'm going to stick to Willie Nelson, though. Yeah. But he's still out touring
at
almost 90 years old.
That's right.
You know, yes. Right now he's going to be my study.
Well, you know, my study, if anybody has looked me up, they know that I'm always talking about my Aunt Terry, who's 97 years old, and who was teaching 3-line dancing classes a week before the pandemic. And she looks like she's 70 if it's a day. And she is just out there. And what she has told me, because I interviewed her, what would you tell a 40-year-old, a 60-year-old, an 80-year-old who wants to live the way you do? And she gave me three great pearls. The first pearl is manage your money. Manage your money so that when you want to do something, the money is there. Just, you know, live within your means. Invest and save and make sure that you have enough money to do what you want to do. The second one is to keep your eyes open and be involved in everything that's going on around you. Keep up with current events and politics and environmental, you know, everything that's going on in the world, you need to have your eyes on. The third thing that she said was to find something that gives you joy and just do it. Like she taught line dancing. I'm 68 years old. I'm about to start Krav Maga lessons in February.
Wow. Well, you know what? You just described that she has a life with purpose. I mean, you wake up every day and you find some joy in being alive and being grateful, right? But I'll tell you, in our nursing facilities, I've spoken with people who are over 100 years old. And I often say, well, what is your secret? Because you're still alert. You can still, you know, call for help and... you know how to fill out your menus. And you wouldn't believe this, but they would say, an apple a day, eat oatmeal, and pray to Jesus. And I was like, okay,
well,
that's
no,
pretty
I,
good.
I,
well,
I
there's a new Netflix special out for that.
I'd add something to that. It's seek joy. You deserve joy. You grew up, you paid your dues, you saved your money, you raised your kids. It's your turn. Do something that just gives you joy. And it also may mean pruning your relationship tree. If you see somebody's name on the caller ID and you don't smile, maybe that person needs to be in a different place in your life.
Uh-huh.
And when you get to be over 50, you get to do that.
That's right.
You know, I don't think so became my motto.
I don't know what it is with that 50th birthday, man.
Something.
It's like all of a sudden you just realize, like, oh my gosh.
Well, I think you get to that point where you say, well, 2/3 of my life is technically over. I'm 60 years old, and I'm like, okay, I'm on my last 1/3, and I'll do whatever I want that makes me happy and put myself first. But Dr. Woodson, there's so many people that miss the warning signs of dementia and Alzheimer's. How do you, because I remember once you had told us that even Dr. Oz had said that he had missed the warning signs.
Well, sure, because we don't think it applies to us as professionals. That's somebody else's grandmother.
Yes.
You know? We don't realize that we can't be objective with our own family. So he shouldn't beat himself up for missing it. Because your degree means nothing when your mommy doesn't recognize you.
Yeah.
Said she who went through that. The first thing, I left Philadelphia on the fastest thing smoking when I was 16 years old because I thought my mother and I were going to kill each other. When the first time she asked permission to interfere in my life, I had the neuropsych testing done. When people are different, they do things differently. They think differently. They act differently. you need to start thinking about their brain function. It doesn't necessarily have to be dementia. It may be one of the masqueraders, something that looks like dementia but is actually reversible, like depression or delirium, a side effect from a medication or something. So when people are behaving differently from the way they used to, you want to start thinking about it.
So let that bulb go off in your head. You know, I was having lunch at Beef or Brady's on Friday, and you popped into my head because right on the screen, a big screen TV, it says multivitamins have been proven to help patients with dementia and aging and Alzheimer's. And I said, oh my goodness, I got to screenshot that and take it to work on Monday and ask Dr. Woodson about it. Have you heard that multivitamins?
No.
Now, yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that for our listeners.
Yeah, in this country, that industry is not regulated. We don't know what's in that stuff. We don't. So there are some studies that recommend certain specific vitamins. Ask your doctor.
Yes.
I mean, Dr. Google is not who you ask about this. The internet is a place to get questions, not answers.
Right, and so I took a screenshot of it, and I'm like, I'm going to ask about this on Monday, because it didn't make any sense to me that they would be talking about this, and they're saying, avoid the mega doses, stick to the recommended amount, multivitamins are not a substitute for a well-balanced diet. But here's the thing, what I'm seeing with the elderly and with my friends who are caregivers, I feel like people are under so much stress because a lot of people are not getting enough sleep. Are you noticing that that's
absolutely
a problem?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And being sleep deprived is like having an alcohol level that's above normal. I mean, you can't function properly when you don't sleep well. But you can't sleep well if you're not assured that while you're asleep, what you need to keep doing is going on. So that means being the quarterback of your care team, making sure that you've recruited and delegated and that you have a way to monitor what is going on. And you asked earlier about, you know, people can't always afford massages and whatever. When I was in practice, I would take 10 minutes in the middle of my day and just work on my novel. 10 minutes. Now, if I was really cranky, my office manager would try to give me 20 minutes. You know, anything that you can look forward to, if you want to read a book or you want to watch a special television show or listen to some specific music or do nothing, I mean, you're allowed to do nothing for a certain portion of the day or one day a week. You know that you're going to go have lunch with a specific person that gives you joy. As long as you put it out there so that you can look forward to it, and you do it on a regular basis. It doesn't necessarily have to be expensive, doesn't have to take a lot of time, but it needs to be something that gives you joy that you look forward to doing. Those of you who looked at my Facebook page, for New Year's, I did a video about keeping promises to yourself. Making promises and keeping them, no matter what happens, that you are going to be able to take that time to take care of yourself. And I call it arsenic time.
Or how about just be your own best friend instead of being somebody else's best friend?
Yeah.
Be
whatever gives you joy.
Right.
Whatever gives you joy.
Dr. Woodson, we have 1 minute left of the segment. I wanted to ask you, how can people reach you for more information to learn more about what the good work you're doing up in Illinois and all over the state, all over the United States, as well as where can they find your books?
My books are all available at Amazon.com, and my website is www.drcherylwoodson.com. You can contact me through that website and find out when I'm going to be speaking, what books are coming out. There's also an area where you can download some tools that will help your caregiving be easier.
I tell you, we needed you today because, you know, this is January, the beginning of the year, and so many people are getting older, bolder, wiser, and sadly some are getting sicker and they need more people in their lives to guide them and help them, because memory loss is not a joke. Being confused and not knowing where you are, not being oriented to time, place, person, situation, that's pretty scary for people when they get to that point.
It is scary, but over the age of 65 in this country, 13% of people have dementia. That means 87% of them don't.
There you go.
Okay?
They'll be line dancing. 87% of
that's right.
Line dancing.
They're all coming to our shows.
Yes.
You have wisdom that this country still needs. You have memories of things that didn't work before that people are trying to do again. Older people have history and wisdom and memory, and we need them. We need to talk to them. We need to listen to them.
Well, I often say, like, if the grandchildren or the children in the villages or in the temples or in the mosque or the churches will take time to sit down with an elderly person and get the wealth of knowledge and experience that they have transferred to the young people, what a great country we would have. But oftentimes you find people try to discard the elderly and they don't recognize.
Right, because anybody in this country that does not generate revenue for somebody else is worthless. In the United States of America. But intergenerational things where I love to do, National Council on Aging has a benefits checkup. You can go on the website, put in all this information, and it will spit out every service that's available in cities and states to help older people. I want the kids to do the tech and the older people to get the information, and those intergenerational relationships are when things happen. Naturally.
I'm telling you, Doc, that's another show coming up because I am big on that. I try to spend as much time as I can with my grandchildren. And even if I have to make up stories about a long time ago back in Trinidad and cooking the curry and sitting on the stoop and talking because we didn't have a table to eat on, I try to give them that knowledge because indirectly I'm teaching them to have compassion and empathy. And be kind and live in a world where you promote goodness and kindness as I leave the planet. And I guess it's about leaving a good footprint behind for the next generation. And it comes from our wealth of knowledge.
But one way of doing it, it's not just us giving them information. They're giving us information, too.
Yeah, they can fix our phones. They can fix our phones and log on for us.
And you can learn how to play video games. And the thing is, kids will talk to you when you are doing things with them, not when you're talking at them.
True.
I have a second-degree black belt. My kids have second-degree black belts. I learned so much about what their life was like just practicing with them.
Yeah.
Just practicing, and then you hear what the girlfriend's doing. You know, it's
that's right.
You got to share time with them. It goes in both directions.
All great habits and great practices to be in. Dr. Woodson, thank you so much for sharing the airwaves with us today here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, we got to take a quick break to listen to our sponsors, and we will be right back right after these messages with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or takeout as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low cost sandwiches and baskets to high end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, Ellen.
That's right, on 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that Listen Live button and catch us on any one of your listening devices, live and in person. Of course, if you want to catch the archive of the show, you can do that by date under the On Demand button on that same website. We also share everything on our all of our social media pages, as well as our website, which is cetamediainc.com. You'll hear the interviews and see pictures and a little blurb about our show. And once again, a great first segment with Dr. Woodson, and our second segment is going to be just as exciting.
Right. And Allie, I saw you shaking your head quite a lot when Dr. Woodson was speaking.
Yes.
What a great show. And did you have like a 20-second takeaway from that segment?
Yes, I did. We need to get our youngsters involved more.
And take care of the elderly,
yes,
and their grandparents.
To be able to help. I have fond memories with my grandparents, and we need to instill that in others. And
what about you, Elle? You 20-second takeaway from that segment?
So I just watched this Netflix special last night about centurions in the Blue Zone, and a Blue Zone of areas where there's pockets of people that are living over 100 years old, very vibrant lives. And a lot of it was, sure, it was diet. They talked about the plant-based diet, but the majority of it was all about being happy, about being social, about staying involved, about having a purpose.
Having a tribe.
And having a tribe of people to be around you. And these 104-year-old people are dancing and gardening and doing all of these things
like
they're 7-year-olds.
Sounds like India and Trinidad. Okay, so our second segment is with Dr. Gregory Perio, who has been a global leader in the use of communications and the media for constructive social change. As president of EC Associates, he carries out a wide array of initiatives that include behavior changes, media training, youth empowerment. Maybe he could incorporate taking care of the elderly right there.
Yep.
And distance education issues with strong emphasis on areas of health, good governance, and conflict resolution. Sounds like we need him to run for the president. So welcome to our show, Mr. Gregory, Dr. Gregory Perio. We're delighted to have you on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. And please, just call me Greg.
Okay, Greg, I like that better, because I'll forget the doctor part and then I'll feel bad. So talk to our listeners a little bit about yourself. And you've done so many things, and you also know about radio, which we love. We're going on 15 years here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we absolutely love our camaraderie every morning, every Monday morning here. So talk to us a little bit about your positions and stuff you've done.
Okay, well, I started out as a historian of African history, and then I went to Voice of America, would broadcast internationally, and I ran the Portuguese to Africa service when they were, Angola and Mozambique were having civil wars, and then I did English to Africa and broadcasting to many countries, transitioning to democracy and where there were civil wars. So I really learned how to use radio to empower people, to get the different points of view, to constructive things, and I was able to get additional money to do this on almost a global scale, and I was really lucky. And you mentioned youth empowerment. I'll give you an example. After the Rwanda genocide, I was able to get some money to do broadcasting for youth, by youth, to youth, about their upliftment, what their problems were, what their solutions were, and the whole reason we did this was to give youth the opportunity to see alternatives to violence, and especially those who, you know, many who had suffered through the genocide in that. So yeah, so my life has been kind of, I don't know how it happened, but it did, about empowering people to lead better lives and to overcome obstacles, and I found that I was doing this on such a massive scale, and then I realized that in my personal, professional life, went going well. I was always in crisis and emergencies and things like that. And so I began to apply the same principles to my personal and professional life, and I needed to change and how to turn crises into opportunities.
Yeah.
And so I wrote two books to illustrate this, to tell my story and the secrets I learned about living a more empowered life.
Well, you know, one of the things you did, which I think is just absolutely phenomenal, you were able to give advice to the United States Agency for International Development, and you contributed to the international policy changes that helped achieve the eradication of polio in India.
Yeah, I was, this is part of the opportunity issue. I was actually fired from the Voice of America. It was a very political thing, and I needed, and I kept on and just, kept working, and people I knew said, Greg, work for us and do this. So I was working for the U.S. Army on one side, what they called red teaming, and I had written a book about Al-Qaeda in Africa and things like that, so they were, I would lecture there, and I'd learn that the Army has something they call red teaming, and that's in every command. People are trained about cultures and about how Americans think and our own prejudice and things like that, and then they challenge the commander's decisions. And so I was, on the other hand, I was writing a report for the U.S. Agency for International Development on polio eradication, and I said, you're doing the same things, you're expecting different results. You need to challenge what's going on in Geneva and the World Health Organization. And they said, we want to meet the guys in the Army and learn from them. And to make a long story short, the Army went to the Gates Foundation and trained the Gates Foundation on how to challenge the assumptions and that were going on in the World Health Organization. And, of course, they had the influence. Gates Foundation was giving hundreds of millions of dollars to eradicate polio. And so they challenged what they were doing in India, and it changed everything, and they were able to eradicate polio. So it was stepping stones taking place, and I feel really good about it.
Yeah, I mean, you've spearheaded a lot of innovation media projects in diverse countries, such as Afghanistan, Angola, Nigeria, Rwanda, Zimbabwe. What was the common theme that you saw recurring in all these countries as far as communication goes? Because we all know that education brings liberation in so many countries, but you helped in this area of communicating and educating the people before the wars, after war, and during. Take us back to that time in your life. Must have been fascinated to be involved in so many places on God's magnificent planet and do so many things.
Well, what I did when I was in the Portuguese to Africa service to give voice to everyone in a conflict, both sides, and there was a lot of opposition in Washington, for instance, during the Reagan years about giving voice to the Marxist-Leninist government in Angola and that, but I went ahead and I did it, and then the U.S. was supporting the rebels, but they began to talk on radio and hear each other and learn their positions, and they began to modify their views and that as a result of that. And the most profound effect was in Mozambique, is a similar situation, and it really helped set the stage for peace talks, and then they realized, there are points we have in common. We're actually human beings on both sides, because when you're in a conflict, you demonize the other. And, and so I learned these things, and there was this really great director of Voice of America, Jeffrey Cohen, and at the time, the Clinton administration, and he says, Greg, come and work with me, and I want you to do this kind of globally, and so that's what happened.
Greg, do you find that the people who profit from wars and conflict it's like they don't want the two sides to come together. They don't want the two sides to talk, because if you use your God-given tongue that God gave all of us to sit down and break bread together and talk, we will find out that at the end of the day, every human being wants to be loved and appreciated. And no mother gives birth to a child after 9 months and say, oh, I want this child to be killed in a conflict, right? So, I mean, do you find that people just don't promote the talking of the both sides? I mean, we all watch what happened in Rwanda, right?
Well, I'll tell you what happened in my case in Angola. I was giving voice to the Angolan government, which was supported by the Cuban troops and all of this, and the U.S.-backed and the South African apartheid-backed rebels. And because my job was to be impartial and tell all sides of the story. But what happened to me was the South African military intelligence ran a covert disinformation campaign against me to get me removed from my job. And that was hell. That was really tough. And Senator Jesse Helms, the segregationist in Congress at the time, he tried to get me removed from my job. And I was denounced in the press as a sympathizer of the terrorist Nelson Mandela in the right-wing press at the time. So, yeah, there are interests that are opposed to peacemaking and talks going place. And that's why we have to keep putting the human dimension to it, that we're all part of a community. And that community,
we're human beings. I think at the end of the day, if you set aside religion and race and class, we would all find that. I mean, I could sit down pretty much and break bread with any human being on God's magnificent planet, because I love the idea that we were all born in God's image. And Allie's shaking her head. Allie's shaking her head. I'm going to let her jump in here. She's got a lot of experience amongst all of us here in the studio. Go for it, Allie. 20 seconds.
Well, just to say, I was mostly curious that what is it that makes people want to fight? Is it they just get fomented up in the lust of it? You know what? I know lots of people that I sit down to dinner with, or that I'm working with, because I live in an older person community, where I don't agree politically with some of them, but it doesn't make them a bad person in my mind. And I'm trying to understand where that foment comes from.
Well, you know what happens in a conflict is what they call in the conflict resolution field othering, that you make someone, the other people, you other them. There's something different. They're different than you. There's something wrong. They're rapists coming across the border from Mexico, or things like that, and you denigrate them, and then you can justify actions against it. Now, what motivates people to do that? The lust for power and lust for money, that they will do and manipulate populations for that. And what I try to argue in my book is that we have to emphasize the community, and that the individual is only realized in community. And we are not by what we have, but what we do.
Right. So would you say, Doctor, that real journalism is dying? Because when you turn on cable news and it's so one-sided and so biased, and you know, as a functioning human being, you could read elsewhere and see what's going on in other places of the world, and you see the death and destruction, and then you say, well, wait a minute, somebody's going to get the contract to rebuild all these countries that we just bombed. And then you start thinking, well, it is about power, it is about greed, it's sinful in a way. So, I mean, how do you feel like real journalism is gone? Where did we find real journalists again?
Yeah, television journalism, TV journalism, is the goal of it is to keep you to the next advertisement.
Yep.
And so they want to sensationalize things and pull you. And then now we have strong political agendas. So there's a lot of sensationalism, political agendas, and then there's not the humanizing of people and tell, like, on a news about what's going on in America. We're just hearing about all the battles of these political elites, and we don't hear about the lives of ordinary people and what they're doing. And you talk about community when you start looking at. One time I had a project, and we sent a reporter from our newsroom at Voice of America to the Balkans when they were having a civil war. She said, and we got money for them to look at peacemaking. She says, when I went out for the newsroom, all I saw was conflict. When I went out and began to talk with people, all I saw was peacemaking.
Yes, because at the end of the day, people want food, water, shelter, a place to live, educate their kids, and a job, right? All over the world. So I just want to tell our listeners.
Can I say, people want to be respected and listened to.
That's right. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Gregory Alonzo Pirio, who PhD, and it's a fascinating conversation. He also was a senior adjunct professor, lecturer, school at the School of International Service. In the past, Dr. Pirio has occupied senior positions at the Voice of America. There, he was the chief of both the English to Africa and Portuguese to Africa services. And I tell you, to speak with someone of your stature on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, it just makes me, it makes me so happy. My inside is just so happy, because we normally we don't get people who are so truthful, you know, that to speak about the world, its people and all its cultures. And for you to have this extensive knowledge and share it with my listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, it's awesome. So let's segue a little bit. You wrote a book called The African Jihad. And where can people find that book? And can you tell us a little bit about the book?
Yeah, I did. I mentioned that I did a PhD in African history and this. And so after I left Voice of America, after I was thrown out for political reasons, I needed to make a living. And again, a friend of mine says, here, can you do a, bring together all these experts in the U.S. who know Islam in Africa and do papers. And so I organized all of this because the military wanted to study better what was going on, and they really liked what I wrote. And so I said, do you mind if I expand this and turn it into a book? And that became The African Jihad, Bin Laden's Quest for the Horn of Africa. And that was published in, gosh, it's already been 2008. And that can be found on Amazon. It was Red Sea Press is the publisher. So
yeah, and you-
and yeah, and so I really tried to give all the perspectives of what was going on and why it was going on and explain it so that people could, you know, respond to it.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of the young people today, Dr. Greg, they're getting their information from TikTok and other social media platforms. What can we do to promote more reading in our country, where people can read and understand and visualize other people? Other, I mean, you send a soldier who's 18 or 19 years old to Afghanistan or Iraq, and they know nothing about the culture of the people. They don't know what the people eat. They don't know, I mean, you know, when they pray. They don't know how they raise it. And so it's almost like people, you know, I read something once on Facebook that rich men create wars so the poor can fight. And I often wonder, is this true? I mean, why aren't we learning more about conflicts and conflict resolution and why they're bad or good for the United States?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely on target, and we need to be encouraging. I tell you, I listen a lot to NPR and PBS on TV, and somebody like the Amanpour show on PBS is really very good. That's an excellent source of information. But even those need to improve, but they're about the best we have. So I would say what I do a lot is I Google and I look for articles, you know, that follow journalistic standards and that may be produced by Human Rights Watch or groups like this that you can trust. and also you know, publish academic articles that you can find online and things like that.
And it's so sad that people won't read those, right? But we have 2 minutes left, Greg, and I wanted to ask you really quickly, how do you envision global health changing in the next 5 years? Because you're like me, you like to read, you like to see what's going on. COVID-19 came and hit our world and shut us down, but we're up and running. But how do you envision all of this changing in the next 5 years?
I'm proud to say that one of the things that was learned by the U.S. government agencies for international development and the CDC was that they have to reinforce the primary healthcare system in so many countries, so that that became so important during the COVID thing to get control over the pandemic and, you know, get people vaccinated, get them into to take the antivirals. If they got COVID, they get tested, all of that. And so I think there's a strong emphasis on improving primary health care access in many developing countries. And we need to even push that further in the United States, because that's why U.S. Life expectancy is lagging behind the other industrialized countries, is because of access to primary health care.
So we have to talk to the decision makers, is what you're saying, too.
Oh, absolutely.
People who make the decisions about our health. Well, Doc, we have like 30 seconds left. Give us your website where someone can find your books, your writings. I would love to have you back on and speak about global health and things like that later on in the year, maybe. But give us your website so that our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends could find out a little bit about you and all the wonderful things you've done in Africa, the Caribbean, Europe, Latin America, your writings, your books, your teachings. It's just phenomenal.
And my art.
Yes.
Okay, it's gregtirio.com, G-R-E-G, T as in Peter, I-R-I-O.com. And you can find my books, how to buy them there, and I have a blog, and I'm also on... I do video podcasting. You can find me on YouTube at Greg Pirio.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that knowledge and goodwill and all of... I mean, I feel good about...
Me too.
All, like, it was a great...
He's all about good governance and conflict resolution. Yeah. He's a peaceful guy on our planet, and we need more people like Greg Pirio to share their knowledge.
That's right.
Our world needs it, Ellen.
And it's an election year, so check your voter's ID. Today's a good day to do that.
And
check
you ladies are lovely. If I were there, I'd give you hugs.
Thank you so much.
We'll send you a virtual hug.
We are out of time here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, please tune in each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on 1510 WWBC. We'll talk to you next week.